Welcome to NextGen Mentoring Forum. The NextGen Mentoring Forum series is to empower, educate, and illuminate individuals who are in or interested in financial planning profession. At each forum, an expert will discuss a topic in the field of financial planning with the purpose of inspiring critical thought and discussion. In today's session, I have the honor to interview Derek Sensenik, who is going to be talking about the topic on how can advisor improve telefinancial planning. My name is Dr. Jolly Jen. I am an assistant professor and director of financial planning program at California Lutheran University. I am a certified financial planner professional and maintain an active financial planning practice specializing in succession program management at Value Growth Institute. I've authored three award-winning books. NextGen Mentoring Forum is sponsored by California Lutheran University School of Management Financial Planning Program. We offer MBA in financial planning that helps financial advisors pursue a leadership position or grow their financial planning practice by deploying advanced financial planning with effective client communication and to streamline practice management. I am honored today to have Derek Sensenik, who has an MBA, also a CFP, as well as a PhD candidate, congratulations, and is an owning partner and senior vice president of financial planning for Encompass Advisory Services, LLC in Houston, Texas. His firm is an independent RIA and also operates as a smart vester pro with Dave Ramsey's team. At his previous company, he served as a regional financial sales leader, supervisory principal, and sales consultant for more than 65 wealth managers. Prior to entering the financial service industry, Derek was the technical sergeant in the U.S. Air Force and served as a military training instructor at Joint Base San Antonio. He also served stationed in Alaska, Kuwait, and Korea. Derek is currently on the last stage for his PhD in the personal financial planning from Kansas State University. Yay, congratulations on that. He has been married to his wife, Angela, for more than 20 years and have two boys. In his free time, Derek enjoys playing softball, watching baseball, and hang out with his sons. So welcome, Derek.
Thank you.
I'm just very curious because I think that many people find their way into the industry differently. And as I'm introducing you, I realize that share with us what is the journey that took you from Air Force, right, in the military base and all the way till your own RIA firm. So share with us how you come about in the industry and how do you progress?
Sure. It's a very interesting story in that when I was getting out of the military, obviously I was a military training instructor, which is the Air Force version of a drill sergeant. And so I didn't have a lot of skills that could be replicated out in the civilian world. And so I just started creating connections and, networking with different people, and I networked into a bank, and I got my start in the banking industry, and I started working there as a sales manager, and I had five branches that I worked with for a family-owned bank in San Antonio, Texas. And through that, then after completing the MBA, I just said, what's next for me from an education standpoint? And then that's when the certified financial planner became a decision for me and a thought for me. And so I passed that and then decided to go into financial planning and haven't looked back from there. So it certainly wasn't a direct path, but it's a path that I would not change at this point.
Well, and thank you very much for sharing that. I know that I was a career changer like you, and I did the same thing. I passed my CFP before I even entered the industry. Yeah. And so I guess there are a few of us that are nuts.
There are, yeah.
I don't know going if I through would... a very different non-traditional way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I found your published article, and by the way, congratulations for being published in the Journal of Financial Planning.
Thank you.
And you have published this article back in September of 2020. And I am assuming that this may have something to do with the pandemic. And the topic is really, really timely. The topic of the journal published article was utilizing what we know about mental health in the telefinancial planning, and basically is a very phenomenal written literature review that you did. So let's get started with the very first questions. So how did you actually compare and link the telemental health, and is it actually comparable from that to the telefinancial planning?
Yeah, it is. And so obviously, as you know, it's always a process. And so this process started in around May and June, which really aligned with the economic shutdown and some of the COVID decisions that were there. And so as we were looking at what we could do to really impact the financial planning world, everybody had gone virtual at that point, right? There was economic shutdown and things like that. And really we said, financial planners have never had to work or were forced into a virtual setting. It is a very traditional face-to-face occupation. And it's you're almost expected to go to the person's home when you first start out in the industry, and then you graduate levels and eventually everybody comes to you. But this was different. Nobody had the choice to go anywhere. And so we said, what industries out there have done the virtual setting for their clients and the practitioner of that one? So we looked at the telemental health side, because again, similarly, it was traditionally face-to-face. You had privacy concerns and you had some of those similar issues that paralleled between the two industries. And so we ended up deciding that we wanted to do a full literature review because we found that there were no published articles on virtual financial planning or telefinancial planning out there. And so we just looked and said, okay, what can we do? And what we found was that a lot of this had to do or had basis within the VA, the Veterans Administration. And so by using the government's budgets, they were able to do a lot of studies because they were able to provide computers for free. They had a captive network of people that needed therapy. Whether it was as a result from war or whatever it may be, they had people that they could test inside of their experiment. And so that helped give us a replication there so that we could pull out some similarities for financial planners and financial planning practitioners from the standpoint of how do we adapt now in the changing environment there to still serve our clients and do it even better, take it to the next level.
And what did you find in terms of from the veterans program, where traditionally they meet in person and then they go from there to telemental kind of a consultation? Are there something that works and doesn't work in that environment?
So there were very similar parallels in the sense of one of the studies looked at distance. And so the further away that individual was from the therapist's office, the more efficient or the higher level of efficacy they found in those situations. You still had, in their experiments, you still had situations where people did not come to the meetings, didn't show up, or what they called a dropout ratio. Those were very similar between the face-to-face comparison with the telemental health. And from a practical standpoint, I think now looking back a year later, advisors would say that they have a similar experience where you still have issues face-to-face with people not showing up. You would still have that same issue in a telemental health or a telefinancial planning type situation.
And I guess that during this past year of pandemic, that all of us are somewhat used to working remotely. I remember last year was a little bit before the pandemic, where I exercise every day and occasionally you fall and you get up and just keep going with it. Mm-hmm. But one day that I just really somehow severely injured, And I was not comfortable going into the doctor's office because we were still in some sort of lockdown. Mm-hmm. So I ended up having a virtual meeting with my physician. And I was kind of not sure if he can actually see the injured portion of the knee area. And surprisingly, he was able to see things that I could not even see. So I think that there are convenience from the patient's perspective. And from a financial planning perspective, what do you see that people tend to gain from having the virtual environment versus going into in person?
Sure. I think there's really two outcomes that have been impactful. So I've taken this article that I wrote and applied it to my own personal business. Mm-hmm. Every one of my clients is virtual. And so I think it was really two things. One is the geography. Mm-hmm. And that's what mm-hmm. we found as well in the studies that we did for the systematic literature review, in that geography in a face-to-face scenario can limit options, right? It limits you in the doctors that you can choose, and it limits you obviously in the financial planners that you can choose. And here what we found is by taking that restriction away, the client was able to find the best fit for them, whether it's the best fit from a doctor standpoint or the best fit from a financial planner. And so they didn't have to compromise with an advisor that they may or may not have felt comfortable with. They could find the best person for them in a situation where they felt most comfortable. The second was really from a face-to-face standpoint was the efficiency. And so, no longer did people have to hire babysitters, travel to and from the office. Houston has a lot of traffic just like every other city. And so it could be a 30 or 45 minute drive to the office. That adds in an hour and a half to somebody's day that they have to account for. And so you think of all the other driving that they have to do, this became much more efficient. And there have been times where one spouse is in one location and the other spouse is in another location. And so it's meeting the client where they are and getting them the services that they need without the formalities that are there of them having to sit right in front of us in our office to have that conversation. Much more flexibility, much more efficiency.
And I guess that, I haven't run into any clients, or at least that I know of, that are afraid to go to a financial planning office. I know that I hate to go to a dentist, yeah, that I still have to go physically. But I think that geography certainly helps the clients to find the best match, if you will, and as well as efficiency of having conversations without waiting for your partners or spouse or children to be in the same room. Now, from a geographical perspective, for those who are still under the FINRA environment or state licensing environment, do you see any sort of challenge over there in terms of licensings?
Sure. So I would say compliance is the biggest piece that somebody that is trying to replicate this would have to address, whether it's with their firm, the state, or FINRA. We're in a flexible situation where we're only serving from a fee-based position, in our advisory practice. And so we don't have those same limitations, but when we get more than five clients in a state, then we do have to address the licensing issues, but that is not something that is too big of a hurdle. And really the benefit or the offset of it is the increased client satisfaction. And so just an example, I have clients that reverse snowbird between
right.
And Minnesota or some of those other, Wisconsin is another one. And so we don't have those same limitations, and no matter where they are, we can have those discussions. And even if they came on board hesitant in our annual review meetings, our semi-annual review meetings, I get incredible feedback about how much they've enjoyed it, because it makes life so much easier for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have more and more people are not only across the states, they could also potentially cross border, right, somewhere else. And having this virtual environment really makes a huge difference in terms of clients' convenience, as well as the efficiencies side of the planning. And of course, no excuses of not meeting us, right?
Right.
So some of the things that you went through in terms of the benefits, Would you mind to talk a little bit about the fit? Because you have mentioned about geographies, you mentioned about the convenience and all that. Tell us about what does fit actually means and how does that actually work for the planning office?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of, you know, clients have information overload. There is not a lack of information, right? And I'll joke with a client, go Google, when should I take Social Security? And if you want to feel overwhelmed, just hit the search feature and you'll become overwhelmed because there's parties on every side of it, from taking it at 62 to taking it at 70 and everything in between. And so they go out and they do that search, but they want somebody that can explain it to them. And I call it putting the cookies on a shelf where everybody can reach them. And so when they meet with us or they interview financial planners, they can get the person that they feel is the best fit and not get, into a decision where, you know what, I just don't feel like driving to another person's office. Instead, it's, you know what, I have another meeting coming up and I'm happy to continue the search process until I feel like we make a great personal connection. And it's important then to think of it from the client's perspective as the practitioner and say, what am I doing to make the client feel comfortable? Do I have the right technology on my side to, I have a whiteboard with my iPad, you know, some of those things there to make sure that I can communicate with them very well, because some are oral learners, some are visual learners, and you have to be able to be flexible there, even within a husband-wife situation or a couple situation, the spouses may learn differently and you have to be able to adapt to each one of their learning styles.
And I remember that even though virtual is not new in the industry, compared to any other industries, I remember that usually my clients came to me, the wife will come to me first. Mm-hmm. However we meet, that either we meet virtually or in person, oftentimes by the time we actually have a joint meeting with the spouse, that will be the very first time I've seen the couple and seeing their interaction. And I do have to say that oftentimes virtual sometimes works better compared to in person, because in person, sometimes people may just hold up and may or may not say things. But in a virtual environment, if they are in the same computer, that's one thing. Or if they are on a different computer, that's another thing. But oftentimes that I think that in the virtual environment, they tend to open up a little bit more compared to the in-person environment. Do you see that come across in terms of clients' interactions? Any changes in terms of the clients' interactions?
Yeah, I think there's a couple aspects of that. One is, you know, we have to be intentional on our side as practitioners to get them to talk, right? There's always one person that's a little bit more talkative than the other. And this allows for, you know, pointed questions or direct questions to somebody that may not seem as participative in the process. But to your point on the scheduling piece, you know, I've done annual reviews where one client is in the parking lot of their business and then the other one is at home, and it gives them the ability to stay on time with their financial plan and not run into those situations where each of the spouses can't find a good fit. And then an additional month goes by where they're not checking in on their financial plan and having a good discussion with their planner. And so that's part of the flexibility or the convenience there.
Right. And I think that's the more convenience that we have now and the more that we can make sure the clients doesn't have much excuses that yeah. they could still work with the plan. So share with us, what are some of potential limitations that the virtual environment potentially could limit from the servicing clients or from prospecting clients' perspective?
Yeah, I think if, you know, starting at the bottom there, going back to the compliance piece there, there's the firm and the compliance department have to be in alignment with this process, right? They have to know that there's privacy considerations that have been addressed, that, you know, you're using secure document transfers, and having a system or a process in place for doing those things. Certainly there's still some limitations. So in my practice, our average client age is about 62 years old. And so people would traditionally say, oh, you know, older individuals or retired individuals aren't a good target market for this. And that really changed. And part of what I say is, if you don't think the clients are going to want it, you're going to be exactly right. With the advent of Facebook and FaceTime and Skype and some of those other things combined with the pandemic, everybody, almost as a blanket statement, is comfortable with technology. Now, certainly there are still pockets of individuals out there that are not. That's not to say 100%, but the target should be to go after those that are comfortable with it and then helping them get comfortable. And so limitations can still be technology. And what we found in our research is some of the telemental health therapists were providing cameras, webcams for their clients. And certainly there's some compliance limitations on that from our standpoint, but some of these things are so cheap, you know, $20 to $30 on Amazon, that if the client is a good client and somebody that you want, you can work with the compliance team to make sure that you're not doing anything out of bounds, but giving them a webcam so that they can access you and do those things is a good option that we saw in our research and then something that we would do in practice.
So a couple of questions that I have, let's go back to the firms in terms of compliance perspective. Now, years ago, when the social media becomes a little bit popular back then, I remember that many firms were not prepared in terms of compliance. So the message that they have for the industry was, do not use social media, until to a point that everyone is on the social media. You have to do certain type of marketing in there. Then the compliance comes back with a whole suite of things that you cannot do, you can do, and things like that. Now, in terms of helping companies to prepare for the virtual environment, what would be your recommendation in terms of firms' compliance perspective?
Yeah, I think just really the privacy has to be addressed first, because like we talked about in the article, if it is a high stakes situation, if you compromise a client's privacy, that relationship is probably lost and is probably going to be detrimental to the company. And so you have to be very cautious and forward thinking about those types of things, thinking about what could happen, but not to the point where it prevents you from conducting business. You know, certainly there's an instinctual level of this from a client's perspective of they are not going to put themselves in a situation where they're going to have to discuss finances in a public situation, right? I haven't had the situation of them at Starbucks. However, you have to be prepared for that. And if a client is at Starbucks or is it at a public setting, you have to just address that and say, hey, is now still a good time for us to have this conversation? We're going to be talking about private things like money. Can you move to a situation where you're more comfortable with having that conversation? Just being ready to have those conversations is probably the most important aspect from the firm's compliance program standpoint.
So I guess really just to set that expectation right at the beginning of the meeting and making sure that all parties are comfortable moving forward. Right. And one of the things that you mentioned about security, and more of these security breach or hacking and that sort of things comes about, how would you advise firms or advisors out there to address that if the clients or prospects were curious about how secure our conversation is going to be, and specifically